Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I came of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, God.
This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on WZO Radio 103.9 LPFM. Live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is November 7th, the day after the midterm elections. And I've got a guest with me today. Do you have a DJ name, or are you just going to use your regular name?
Let's go by Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine.
That sounds like it could be either one, your real name.
Yeah.
Or a DJ name. Anyway.
You can figure it out for yourself.
Yeah. And we don't have Wombat on the phone. He's doing a special presentation for a Free Thought group in Kentucky, so we're going to have to bear without him tonight. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faith, God's holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? You knew that.
Yes.
You've been on the show.
Been on a few times.
A few times now. And it's been on the air for over 8 years, and most people haven't heard about it because it's on Community Access TV. You can watch it streaming online if you want to at ctvknox.org. Or if you have Comcast Channel 12, I think it is, you can jump over there right now and see it online for yourself. We hope that you'll jump right back, though, for the radio show and stay tuned here and maybe record it or DVD the TV show and watch it later. But it starts at 6:30 every Wednesday, and we start at 7. We had a problem with the overlap, but we're just going to have to deal with it. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. What's today's topic, Tom?
Today I think we're going to talk about original sin.
Original sin. That's the reason that Jesus came and died for us. Is that right?
That's correct.
According to the theology behind the Christianity.
I'm so thankful that he came for the sin that he gave me.
Well, theoretically, original sin happened a long time before he came.
Right.
What was funny, though, that I saw one person on the View on TV.
That was a good place to
get some good information. But there was a woman on The View. She was a regular on the show. And somebody told her about the Garden of Eden being, you know, very much older than Jesus, and that there's a lot of history after the Garden of Eden. And she said, no, Jesus started history. Jesus was at the beginning. No, they had to correct her on her own theology. But anyway.
He is credited with, you know, the old time system he used to have. So you have to give him that.
The old time?
Yeah. After death, before Christ.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's before Common Era.
Yeah.
Common Era.
BCE,
yeah,
as it were. So let's go to original sin. Let's lay down the foundation of original sin. What happened?
So, if you guys don't know, there is this magical place full of non-GMO organic products, probably. I don't know. Maybe God likes genetic modified organisms. I do. And it's called the Garden of Eden. And so, what happened, God made Adam, the first man, and then he made Eve, the first woman, And they got bored. And he said, I give you the entire world and all these animals, but there's two trees that you cannot take part of or eat. One was the tree of life, which is not really talked about in the Bible, which is way cooler than the tree of knowledge of good and evil.
Yeah, really.
Gives you immortality. Uh-huh. That's not really talked about too much.
Nope.
But then the tree of knowledge and good of evil, which so happens is kind of like an education for the world. As a story, doesn't really depict it that way, but Eve is, you know, walking around the garden, and then she sees a serpent in the tree, right, Larry? Is it a serpent or a lizard?
It's a serpent,
it's a serpent.
It's a story, but in the story, it's a serpent.
And I don't really know what type of fruit. What fruit would you like it to be?
It just says fruit. Nobody knows. They use an apple most of the time.
Yeah, apple. You know, some people say pomegranate, but, you know, those things are really hard to get open.
Yeah.
So I doubt
it. It was in the Middle East, so it could be a fig.
Could be a fig.
Yeah.
And the serpent's like, hey, you should eat this fruit. And then Eve's like, no way. God said if we eat this fruit, we're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And the serpent's like,
and
guess
he did.
What?
In the Bible, he said that if you eat the fruit, surely you will die. I mean, she was telling the truth.
Like, and not die like an old age, but die immediately. Like, this is poison. This stuff is toxic.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he tells her, no, that's not the case.
No.
And
he says, don't believe that guy.
Yeah, and at this point, God lied, the snake didn't, the serpent didn't.
So it's really weird. If you look at it from this point on, who's really the hero of the story? My vote is for the serpent.
Yeah. Not only that, but if he hadn't talked Eve into it and we hadn't eaten from it, we wouldn't know the difference between right and wrong. We might as well be animals in the field like God originally created us. I mean, why give us driving curiosity and a large brain and intelligence if we weren't going to explore philosophy, let's say, or science or the universe? What did he want us just to stay dumb? I mean, that's, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. Even Galileo had point of view. Why would God give us driving intellect and then forbid our use of that?
Right. And beside the point, also you mentioned that, did we know better? So let's start there. If we didn't have the knowledge of good and evil, we didn't know what good or evil was.
Or right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Basically, a mentality of a child.
We wouldn't have known that obeying God was wrong.
Right.
Or right. I mean, this story makes no sense on the basic level. But we went ahead, Eve ate the apple. And she learned some stuff.
Yeah, she learned that while she's naked, maybe she has some sexual impulses. Maybe she wanted a career. Who knows what she thought about.
Apparently the apple contained shame as well.
which is really weird because, you know, animals don't really have shame about their naked bodies. So why would Eve have shame?
Mm-hmm.
And then, basically, that is the reason why, apparently, a lot of people believe, not all Christians, but a lot of people believe that we have all this evil in the world.
Yeah, well, that was the first sin. That was the one that theoretically tainted humanity with sin for not only them, but for every single person born after them. And, I mean, can you imagine laws in the world, in America, wherever you live, you know, that said you're responsible for the crimes of your great-great-great-great-grandfather? And if, you know, if he didn't pay a certain amount of money and his son didn't and his son didn't and his son didn't, then you had to pay for it?
That would be awful.
Yeah, that would also be probably what the future capitalism is, the way we're heading.
And I'm absolutely certain that a lot of my ancestors were really dumb and probably a part of some really evil things back in the day. So I want to be responsible for their decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
I barely want to be responsible for my own.
Right. But why would God blame them for something they didn't know until after they ate the fruit?
That's a good question.
Yeah. And there's several other things. But, I mean, that to me is the most pressing one. If they didn't know the difference between right and wrong, and they didn't know that obeying God or disobeying God was in that realm of right or wrong, then they wouldn't have known that eating the apple was wrong. And I've talked to many Christians, and I've explained it to them just that way. And they'll look at me blank-eyed and say, but he told them not to. And, I mean, just totally missed the point.
Yeah. But if I tell you to fly the plane, you're not going to have the knowledge of the fly the plane,
right?
Or not, right?
Mm-hmm. But you don't expect to be punished for not flying the plane.
Exactly.
Which is what God is doing in Genesis. There's other things about Genesis that really bother me. Let's say that, I mean, God could have placed the tree of knowledge anywhere, right? He didn't want them to eat it.
Right.
He told them not to eat it. He could have placed it on the moon.
Right.
He could have placed it across the world, on the other side of the world. He could have placed it anywhere he wanted. Where'd he put it? Right in the middle of where they lived. And then told them not to do it, not to eat it, and then wandered away. Isn't God supposed to be omnipresent?
Right.
All right. Where was he? Where was he when the serpent was tempting Eve?
I mean, he walked in the garden all the time. Visited Adam, their buddies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, pal, what's going on?
Right. And then he's supposed to be omniscient. So he's wandering after they eat the fruit, and they're naked, and they're hiding, and he's wandering through the garden saying, where are you? I don't see you. Why are you hiding? I mean, this sounds to me like he, one, laid a trap for them, and then two, sprung it on them using the serpent, because doesn't everything in the universe go along with God's will? Isn't he responsible for everything? And then he's holding them responsible for falling into his trap. And how can you possibly not fall into a trap that God has laid for you?
Yeah.
Please.
How is a little human supposed to compete with the Almighty being, one? Mm-hmm. Two, is God just really just trying to tempt us? Is that his whole purpose? Or three, did God powers, like did he go on a bender and he had a really bad hangover and his powers were working that well?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, for me, the whole story just seems like he laid a trap for humanity. So that everybody would kowtow to him for the rest of eternity, and we would be his little slaves. We'd have to do everything that he wanted us to do. Not only that, we wouldn't be just his slaves. He specifically wants us to worship him.
Mm.
I mean, get down on our knees, pray to him, sing songs to him, aggrandize him. You know anybody else like, no, I won't go there. I won't go there.
No politics.
Yeah. But this is the basis. This is the very beginning of Christianity. This is what it's all founded on. I'm going to take just a little bit of a right turn here, or left turn, whichever. I'm going to go off in a distance. 90%, 95% of all biological scientists in the world today, PhDs, the academies of science, know from personal experience of looking at DNA and fossil records and everything else that's been laid out for the theory of evolution, that it's true. The theory of evolution is how we resulted on this planet. Now, why does Christianity take such umbrage with evolution? They don't take umbrage with the theory of gravity, or the theory of germs, you know, the germ theory of disease, or the electron theory, or electromagnetic theory, or any of the other theories, but they all deny evolution. And this is why. If evolution is true, there was no Garden of Eden. No Garden of Eden, no sin.
Mm-hmm.
No sin,
no need for God.
No reason for Jesus to come and die. And they want you to forget all that. They will literally have their teachers in classrooms telling you that we're supposed to teach evolution, but I'm not going to because it's false. It's, you know, God put us here.
What school did you go to, Larry? I want to know.
Oh no, it's just where I was brought up. No, I was brought up in Western Tennessee and Western Kentucky, and I can revert to that pretty much anytime I want to. As a matter of fact, I went to Chicago at the age of 5. My parents moved to Chicago, put me in a elementary school there, and one of the first things they did was put me in remedial speech. So you can imagine what my accent was like when I went to Chicago. But I mean, it's never all the way gone. You can always jump back into it. But this is why evangelicals have such a problem with evolution. Evolution is pretty much game over for Christianity and the basis of original sin, the reason for Jesus coming back, the reason he died, and on and on and on. So, you know, it is game over pretty much because, you know, like I say, 90% of the the scientific world agree that evolution is how we got here.
Yes, but like, how did sin get here then? Why do we have all these evil things? If We didn't commit the sin and bring evil to this world. Where'd it come from?
Evil?
Yeah. Sin and evil. Sin and evil are
No. You can have an evil person, and he can do harm to people around him. But it's not technically a sin unless it's against the will of God.
Okay.
Now, if there is no God, as we believe, there's no sin. Sin does not exist. Dan Barker said in his book that sin is a disease that was created by the church. So in order that they could sell you the cure, they can sell you the cure for an imaginary disease, basically. And since you sin every single day, you do something that's against the Bible, one way or another. Even if you have evil thoughts, or even if you have lustful thoughts, then you've got to pay more. You've got to continue getting the cure from the church by going in for confession, or just going up and trying to get forgiveness for your imaginary harm that you did. It's like apostasy is, and what's there's a, if you talk against the church or talk against religion, what there's a term for that?
Blasphemy.
Like the Northern Ireland blasphemy laws that recently overturned. But I mean, those are victimless crimes because you are blaspheming against a non-existent entity. So there's really no reason for, you know, it's not really causing any harm. I guess the only harm that you would be causing is hurting the feelings of those who still believe in that imaginary being or in that fairy tale of a book.
Right. So if there's no sin now and we live in this humanity world, where do we get our morals from? Because a lot of religious people think that sin is the reason why we do bad things. But the rest of the things come from God, that's where moral. Or is that getting too off the question of the original sin topic?
Well, I think we covered the original sin topic about where it came from, why it's flawed, why it's really not a real thing because of evolution. It didn't actually happen. And also that it's the sin is not harm. Sin is a trespass. Transgression against an imaginary or a deity, which may or may not exist. But evil, there are psychotic people who are born without empathy, without compassion for their fellow man. There are people who are born with a really high degree of greed and self-worth. You know, people like that do things for their own interest, and they don't care if they hurt you or not, or hurt other people, hurt people around them. And that's why we have laws, and that's why we put those people away, so that they can no longer hurt the people around them. Unless you're in prison with them.
Yeah. If you want to know about prison, watch Oz, HBO. It's an old show, but yeah, you don't want to go to prison, trust me.
What show is that?
It's called Oz.
Oh, Oz? I never watched it.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is just too strenuous only for my taste.
You know, keep in mind, because you mentioned, I wanted to mention this before we move on to any other topic, is that the God placed the tree in the middle there, and he's omniscient, but he also placed Satan there.
Well, no. If you read Genesis, it never says the serpent is Satan.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, this is a later interpolation by a lot of people in evangelicals, Christianity, and maybe even just early Catholic Church put him in there, but it just says serpent.
Do you think it was because a lot of people feared snakes and snakes were evil because they, you know, they're toxic?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how many creation stories are there out there in every uncivilized world society, for that matter? They all have the creation stories, the creation myth. And it's always with some kind of animal interacting with another kind of animal or a human. And Christianity is no different than that. Well, actually, this would be Judaism because Christianity is based on Judaism. But back in the early creation story of Judaism, had man, had a snake, and had an omniscient being. And you know, they brought about the world, according to the story that we see now, and the problems that we see in around us.
Yeah, there's one that this Marian one. It's the same civilization that I think that produced the epic of Gilgamesh, but it's called the Enuma Elish. They found like these seven tablets, and there was a story about seven gods, and that's where you get probably this popularity of seven in the Bible. And then actually, it was Adam or something, which meant like red dirt, translated into red dirt. And then he was created with this woman named Lilith. And Lilith was cool because she was like a very powerful woman, didn't take crap from Adam, and she wanted to do things her way, and she actually left Adam, and then God's like, oh, I guess I messed up. Now I'm going to give you submissive Eve. And then over time, I don't know how, you have to look into this yourself, but Lilith actually became more and more serpent-like.
Is this from a Gnostic gospel or something?
It was from the Sumerian text.
Oh, okay. You mentioned Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh was a very interesting old story, too.
Oh, yeah.
And it outdates the Bible, predates the Bible by 1,000 years, maybe more. And it has the flood,
yeah.
A major flood in it. But if you think about it, societies all over the world, because of the inconsistencies of weather patterns, every civilization has had a major flood. And now, of course, they didn't all happen at the same time, but religious people would like to tell you, specifically Christians, that they did all happen at the same time, but there is no evidence for that at all. Matter of fact, if we want to talk about the flood for a minute.
That's a long one.
Yeah. excuse me. There, you know, according to Christianity, the flood happened, 3,000 years ago?
Yeah.
2,500, 3,000, something like that. There were flourishing civilizations at that time that are still, that wrote nothing about it. The Chinese, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, all of these people had flourishing civilizations, and the Chinese and the Egyptians had navies, for Christ's sake. I mean, did you ever think that there might be another boat in the world at that time? But yes, they had navies. They did wars. They had maneuvers on the seas. They had all kinds of ways to ride out a flood. But and they never made any dent in the civilization or any record of a worldwide flood, for that matter. Okay, coming back from the flood.
So, yeah, we're talking about sin, and I like how you explain what sin is, and it's very different from evil.
Right.
But I would like to ask you, did God ever sin? And if you want to worship someone that made you have this, be punished for a certain type of criteria, which he called sins, wouldn't he be perfect and not sin at all?
Well, you're talking about God himself or Jesus?
God, Jesus.
Okay, well, there's a difference
I would say, I'm talking more about Yahweh.
Okay.
But
there's
Jesus
a line
also
of,
kind of
a, there's yeah. a line of thought that God can do no wrong, cannot sin, because whatever he does is righteous. And, you know, if he says it, it's right. So if he does it, it's right. And anything that opposed to that is wrong. I don't buy into that for a minute, because some of the things he does are immoral, or did. In the Old Testament, he asked David to take a census. David didn't take the census. So did he punish David?
Oh, yeah.
No?
He punished the children, I think.
He punished the people he was supposed to count.
Did he say, like, David, dry up their bosom or something, and the children starved to death? Was that one?
I don't know. I think it was a plague on them, but I don't know what the plague details were.
A lot of horrible
but why things. Would why would he punish individuals that did no wrong? It was David that did wrong. Moses went to Egypt, he brought his wife with him.
Oh.
And she was beautiful. Mm-hmm. And he came in there, and they were the Egyptians were interested in his wife, you know, for the Pharaoh. And he said if he was married to her, they would have probably killed him and took her. So he lied.
He's a coward.
He lied and said that she was not his wife, that she was his sister. So they took her for the Pharaoh, but didn't kill him. But then God punished the Pharaoh. Now, why would he do that? I mean, that is immoral. So, you know, there's a line of philosophical thought, I can't remember the name of it, maybe it'll come to me, that if God, whatever God says is right, then tomorrow he could say rape is right, or murder is right, or poisoning your children is right, or cannibalism. And that makes no sense as far as morality goes. Now, if goodness and right exist outside of God, and God is just telling us about the things that are right, then he's just a messenger. We don't need him. We can figure it out ourselves.
He's not all-powerful. He's taking observations just like us.
Right. So, this is an ancient philosophical argument that I cannot remember the name for, but we'll try to come up with it later after the break, which we need to do here in a little bit anyway, and we'll bring it up again and mention the name of it this time.
I don't really know I like there's a lot of like horrible things that God did in the Bible, but I just focus on the petty sins because one of the Ten Commandments. I think the last time I was on, we talked about the Ten Commandments. One was not to lie, and in the Bible it lists at least four times that I could find easily that God lied. 1 Kings 22:23, he put a lying spirit into these prophets' mouths. Same thing in 2 Chronicles 18:22. Ezekiel 14:9, I, the Lord, have deceived that prophet. So he deceived, he lied. 2 Thessalonians 2:11, God sent delusion so they will believe a lie. So three times he's a deceiver and a liar. Sounds a lot like the nemesis that they try to put in the Bible, which is Satan, which if you look at it in a different way is actually the good guy, more or less. But God himself sinned, and this is a minor sin, regardless of the genocide he committed, creating evil, which we can get into some other time. He committed sin. So he set up us to have a religious sin, to feel guilty about it, and then ignores all of his own rules. And why would you want to serve someone that can't even listen to his own rules?
It's even worse than that. In the Bible, God tells us through Jesus to forgive our enemies. But what does God do with his enemies?
I think he slaughters them or something.
He burns them for eternity. So he's a hypocrite too. So we're going to take a little break right here. We're going to play a song and have a station identification. We'll be back in probably about 5 minutes. So hang in there. See you in a minute.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
The Bible tells me I was made for and from man. And I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah. I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, 'cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. The Bible tells me I must be silent to can't hear my voice. My role has been divinely defined, and I have no other choice. I may not be a teacher of men, I must cover up my shame. These are the laws of the one who in vain I cannot name. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. And my punishment for wanting to learn. Impure, you cannot touch me, and it has nothing to do with where I've been. It is part of who I am. It is because I corrupt men. I was asking for it just by being a woman. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. Am I punishment for what? Surrender to his will, yeah, I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, 'cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. We'll be right back.
Sorry for the sudden stop on that song. Don't know why it's doing that. But I'm going to have to re-record it. Anyway, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dr. Phi, and we have Thomas Paine with us.
Hello.
And with us is live on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is November the 7th, and it's 7:30. So if you're listening to this on any other day or time, then it's probably a rebroadcast or a podcast. First, I want to talk to you about the free thought groups that exist here in Knoxville that you can join. And we'll go first to the Atheist Society of Knoxville. Founded in 2002, we're in our 16th year. ASK now has over 850 members, nearly 900 now. And you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. Actually, if you type in Knoxville Atheist in Google, it'll take you right to us too. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome, and that is as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town or Google. If you don't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions at the Pellissippi State campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays at the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. That's a mouthful, so if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England a few years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. Don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Keep the good stuff that churches have and throw out the superstition. They only meet once a month, though, on the fourth Sunday. They meet at the International Building down at the Old World's Fair site. So check that out at the end of the month. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school student or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to find friends, other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Earlier in the show, we talked about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Let's go into a little detail there. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it most every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192, or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording them and posting them to YouTube. Just go there and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the community or the radio show or TV show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You can be our next co-host or guest.
Yeah, you don't have to have any skills since I'm on here. So don't be scared.
Yeah, all you have to do is be able to hold a conversation. And we guarantee a good conversation at the Ask Meetups. So come down on Tuesday nights, and we'll see you at Barley's. It's about 5:30, happy hour-ish. Anyway, getting back to our topic, we were talking about
original sin. Yeah. And then we went into is God holy himself? And we kind of showed some reasons why God's not perfect.
Or moral, if he's moral or not.
He should probably burn in the place he created.
Yeah.
We talked about how Christianity itself created, made us sick to in order for us to heal us. That is like a snake oil salesman you see in like the 1910.
Mm-hmm. The concept of sin is a disease that the church sells you so that they can sell you the cure for it. It's a non-existent problem, non-existent disease. Sin is a transgression against a God. If there isn't a God, if God doesn't exist as we believe, then it's sin. It doesn't exist.
Do you think so? About you? Did you have any problems what type of problems did you suffer from feeling like sins were real? I feel like that affects a lot of people.
Well, you can never get out of having being sinful. I mean, it's part of being human. And they sell you that in the church. You're born into sin, you live sin, and you die sin. Even your thoughts can be sinful. And unless you have a thought police telling you every thought, then every one of them that strays toward the edge even a little bit can get you to hell. But anyway, that's what they tell you in the church to try to sell you the cure, which only they, of course, can give you. And only their particular religion and their particular sect of that religion can give you the cure. We also mentioned a little bit earlier a dilemma about God, saying if he does something wrong, is he really wrong? Well, the name of this is the Euthyphro dilemma. Euthyphro is spelled Euthyphro. And that was a guy back in the old days, I think it's Greek, saying that if God commands something to be good, is it good because he commands it, or is it good and he's just telling about us? And that's the problem. If he commands it to be good, he can command tomorrow that, you know, rape is good, or death is good, or murder, or cannibalism, anything. If he's telling us that it's good, that an action is good because it is good anyway, and not because he says it's good, then he's just a messenger and we can figure it out ourselves. So it's a dilemma, and it's been a problem for religions. Any religion believes in a God per se, or a God that creates morality and commands us to toe the line for at least 2,500 years.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
And a lot of people wonder where morality comes from, and that's a long topic on ourselves. But that definitely comes from evolution a little bit, altruism, and being wanting to help your tribe, kinship. But then as a society's group, we figured out what rules worked really well for everyone to get along and what rules didn't work out real well. And we're still figuring that out. But if you look through the timeline, historic timeline scale, progress has been really, really increased greatly since the invention of technology, especially.
Mm-hmm. Communication.
Revolution. We have people, most people have a roof over their head, especially in the developed world. People are fed. We have a lot of these things that are progressing. People's rights and freedoms are being paid attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things.
Yeah, and that's not, and is not based on the Bible. A lot of people tell you that our rights and freedoms are given to us by God, and all you got to do is look at the Bible and see that that is not the case. He will limit everything that you do, right down to your thoughts, if he had the chance. And in the Bible, it tells you that. In the Bill of Rights, our forefathers would say that, you know, we are guaranteed by our Creator, but the Creator could be the universe. The Creator could be a deist God. They're not talking about Christianity. Of course, every Christian would point to it and say, yes, they would say they mean God. Of course, every religion would point to it and say, yeah, say he means our God. No, they're just talking about a deist God or the universe itself, that we are endowed by our Creator for certain unalienable rights. And if you look at those rights, a lot of them are proscribed by the Bible and by the commandments that God has put out. Like the very first commandment is, thou shalt have no God before me. What does that have to do with the freedom of religion? You know, the freedom to exercise your religion. That the very first thing conflicts with the Bill of Rights.
In fact, God would probably send an army to kill you, or command an army to kill you, because you worship another God, which
right.
He did numerous times in the Bible.
Exactly.
So I wanted to talk about how sin makes people feel. And I remember one of the first times, and maybe you had a similar experience, but when I realized that I no longer believed in God and I was an atheist, that I had this like weight lifted off my shoulders.
Right.
That I no longer feel shame and guilt and actually experienced life a lot better. My well-being in life improved greatly just from that idea of not feeling guilty all the time for things I thought I should be able to control, but I couldn't control.
You can't.
Like thoughts, especially.
Mm-hmm. And physical impulses.
Exactly. Learning.
Right.
You learn from your mistakes. You shouldn't feel guilty about every mistake you made from this giant creator, but you should feel you should feel grateful that you're able to make a mistake and still move forward and become better and improve yourself.
Right. Now, Christians will a lot of times talk about getting forgiven for your sin and moving forward. They'll say, yeah, but that's why you got to be forgiven. Yeah, in other words, to feel better, you've got to go to an institution that has a person designated to absolve you of your sins. And then you have to give that organization 10% of your funds to be a member of it. I don't think so. That wouldn't be the way a God works if it was a God that would have any kind of morals or justice. Yeah, it sounds to me like an industry, a pyramid scheme.
It does. And if you are totally absolved from all your sins all the time and you didn't feel like, if that's all I have to do as well, then maybe you wouldn't learn so much about your mistakes.
Right. And a lot of, they'll ask me, you know, Christians ask me, what do you do when you've committed harm against somebody because they know I don't believe in sin? They wouldn't say, what do you do when you sin? Because they know I never sin. I mean, sin is a trespass against God. If there's no God, there's no sin. But if I harm somebody, so you can't go to Jesus for forgiveness. What do you do? Well, you go to the person that you've harmed, and you beg their forgiveness, which is the only way to get some kind of recompense for that person in this world where it counts. And if they will not forgive you, then you have to live with that for the rest of your life. But it's real-world solutions for real-world problems. And think about this for a second. You've hurt somebody. You're religious. You consider it a sin. Do you go to that person? Maybe. A lot of times they just go to the priest, and they get absolution from the priest. Mm-hmm. Does that help anybody?
Well, but think. Don't talk to a Catholic. It does not.
Well, think about this. Think about the power that it gives the church if everybody in a village is coming to the priest and telling him their deepest and darkest thoughts and the trespasses and things they've done against other people in that village. What kind of power would that give to that priest, to that institution, especially if they're reporting it up the line?
Exactly. And we full-handed experience that type of power in a lot of churches, not even the Catholic Church, but Jehovah's Witness, Mormons,
right,
evangelicals.
And it would be ludicrous to think that they wouldn't use that power, considering how we know that they take advantage of helpless people and children. You know, now it's like the Catholic Church in the news that we're reading that they prey on children sexually.
Ugh.
And not only children, you know, everybody. They have women, and I'm sure they have men that they prey on as well.
And most of them, I am scared, trepidation about how much more things are going to turn up with all of these other investigations that are probably going to go forward, showing all the corruption in these organizations.
Yeah. The Freedom From Religion Foundation has a newsletter that they put out about once a month. It's about 10 times a year, so it's not every month. And they have, now this is a newspaper size document. It's not just, you know, a pamphlet. It's a newspaper size document where they devote 2 full pages every month to black collar crimes. These are crimes that are committed and reported to the police, whether or not they're acted upon or have been found guilty or not. But these are crimes that people report. That priests have done, that bishops have done, that evangelicals and pastors and anybody in the clerical field has done. And it's 2 full pages every month for things that have happened in America. And, you know, I was thinking about making a whole show out of one of them, you know, but it would be pretty boring, I would think.
And the human in me, I would love to get revenge on these horrible deeds. And that's something we might want to talk about is the punishment value. Is eternity of punishment for these sins worth any type of crime, regardless of how heinous the crime is?
Right. There's a saying that says you don't want to punish somebody infinitely for a finite crime. In other words, even Hitler, the worst case example. Let's say he killed 10 million people. Well, let's say he killed like 8 million Jews and 1 million homosexuals and 500,000 atheists, and he persecuted a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And that's not counting the soldiers who died for him and the soldiers that they killed. let's say 20 million. Let's say 20 million people died in World War II because of Hitler. Okay, well, that's 20, you could say 20 million lifetimes that he should burn in hell, you know, for his crimes. But even that is only, what, a couple of million years.
Right.
But no, God wants to burn him forever. And the thing about, and don't get me started on this, but Hitler was a Catholic. And he actually called in his book, Mein Kampf, he said he was doing the work of Christ in persecuting the Jewish people. Why? Because the Christ, the Jewish people killed Christ. I mean, they've been persecuted for 2,000 years over this imaginary trespass.
I think it's like one verse in the Bible, too. So even, not
right.
only is it imaginary
right.
God that they do it for, but
mm-hmm.
one
and that
little
was,
snippet of a verse.
And this is the New Testament. This is the new religion that was spinning off of Judaism.
And
what I'm saying is Christianity spinning off of Judaism was wanting to separate themselves from Judaism. So they put a line in there and said, let his blood be on us, is what they said, the Jews said after sending him to the cross. And because of that, how many millions of Jews have been killed and persecuted during the 2,000 years since then? But since Hitler was a Christian, I mean, he was supposed to, he'd probably be in heaven.
Maybe he just asked for forgiveness.
Right, and before he was suicided and burned. But all the Jews that he killed would be in hell right now because they did not believe in Jesus. What kind of morality are we talking about here?
Yeah. If I go to heaven, that's the first thing I'm going to do is punch Hitler in the face.
Yeah.
But you can't punch people in the real world because you can accidentally kill them and harm them and then
but,
shouldn't
yeah.
promote violence at
but
all.
But should there be pain there? You know, who knows? And will there be freedom of choice in heaven?
Yeah.
All kinds of things.
Well, I'm pretty sure I won't last long up there.
What's your next point there?
Oh, that we really covered everything.
Really?
Yeah. Created sick.
Created sick and commanded to be well.
My friend Avery, he mentioned one thing that the sin dynamic or the sin structure really limits our type of creativity and progress.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow us to expand what would be better morality and what better rules would be because these sins are constricting us.
Right.
We have to work within a certain amount of tools. And so if you look at sin in like more of an abstract way, it really stifles or deters progress in society.
Stifles?
Stifles.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. No.
Stifles? I was thinking. You get it, though.
Yeah, but think about an eternal life, though. If this life is really a flick of a eyelash, you know, in length compared to eternity, and really what we need to do is be studying the Gospels so that we can prepare for the final test and get passed into eternity, then why should we do anything but study the Gospels?
Judge,
I mean, this lifetime, according to Christianity, this lifetime is nothing. We should not be doing anything other than going to church and singing his praises and making sure that we get into heaven. And if that were the case, we would all be like holy men in a village in India. We would all be sitting down with the book open in our lap, burning incense and trying to understand what God wanted us to do before the end of our life so that we can be sure to get in there. Now think about the progress that would be made if we all did that.
We just have to look at certain countries that are ruled by religion.
Yeah, but who would feed those people? If the farmers are sitting there with a book in their lap and burning incense, or who are the people building cities? Or
what type of food we have? Right. The same three crops that all the other civilizations have. Nothing would be new. No,
we'd still be hunters and gatherers.
Maybe, yeah.
Because nobody, I mean, the only thing that would drive you to get up would be going to hunt something to eat so that you go sit back down again and read the Holy Book. It's counterproductive, as it were.
And boring.
Oh, yeah. Well, once you've read it through five times, you know, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? You pretty much know it. But anyway, that's what we're saying. You know, if the theology is true, then most people are ignoring it. They're living like atheists. They're functional atheists because they go about their daily life. They go shopping. They eat. They watch movies. They talk on the phone. You know, and no thought to religion at all until maybe on Sunday morning.
In fact, that kind of pisses me off, and I'm also happy in a way. I talk to so many different types of Christians, and most of them say this: "Yeah, I don't really read the Bible that often. Mm-hmm. I really don't know that."
Or have never read the Bible.
Never read the Bible. Yeah. And you believe in a certain thing that condemns you to eternal fire or not, and you don't think it's important. That just shows you how, I guess, that just shows you how inadequate the Bible is for modern day life. It's not needed at all, mm-hmm. and you can survive just fine.
Yeah, there was several Christians I talked to about today and the modernity and how we have all these great inventions and discoveries and all that, and they said, "Well, yeah, Christian scientists. You know, it's Christians that drive the forefront of science." And well, that's not the case. Well, first of all, early scientists. Were scientists way before Christians became, you know, came on. Egyptians had scientists, you know, the Sumerians had scientists, way before Christianity came on. Secondly, when Christianity did come on and it took over, like in Europe, in Rome, huh?
What were those ages called when Christianity took over?
Oh, the Dark Ages.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about even in Rome before the Dark Ages, if you're a Christian and a scientist, you better toe the line of Christianity. You better say that what they tell you about the universe is true, or you no longer be around. You know, they'll either kill you or throw you out of the church, which would pretty much be the same, or they will stifle your publishing, like they did on Galileo and Bruno, I can't remember his first name, but they'll burn your books, stifle your research, and then kick you out of society. Now, the thing that really gets me is that when a Christian scientist does make a discovery, they're not doing religion when they do that. They're doing science.
They're doing the scientific method. It has nothing to do with their belief system. It has nothing to do with God, and God's not whispering in their ear what to discover. They're using every tool we have that a non-religious person will use.
They're using the scientific method.
Yes.
And if it goes against the church and they have enough power, they'll pull away from the church like lately. You know, most of the scientists today in the International Academy of Scientists, about 95% of them are atheists. Even if they're not, they don't have a particular church that they go to because they believe in a deist God, one that started the universe and then either died in the explosion or left and doesn't have anything to do with us. But religion has never brought us any discoveries. I mean, practicing religion doesn't do anything for you in the scientific realm. It's science itself and scientific methods that bring answers to us. And it has turned out to be the most reliable method for determining truth about our universe that there is.
It allows us to live in reality and function in it mm-hmm. properly. Mm-hmm. One of the good examples I think Neil deGrasse Tyson gave in one of his lectures was countries that are theocratic for Islam. And then he listed all the Nobel Prize winners that were Muslim. Very, very few. Like one or two up there. Mm-hmm. Because the religion, even though before Islam became, or before it was theocratic, there was this huge, like,
Arabic
and mathematics mm-hmm. and discovery, and then all of a sudden Islam took over and stifled
right.
everything.
That's why we call our numbering system Arabic numerals. They named half the stars in the sky. They were at the forefront of science until theology took over, and then their scientific discoveries dropped to nothing as they practiced their religion rather than science.
You're just getting all these, you know, rays of thought from God, so why do you need to look and study anything?
Yeah.
Right? He has
yeah.
all the answers.
And nowadays,
like a giant pill of Xanax, that's what God is.
And nowadays, Muslims or even Christians will point to something in the Bible and say, "See, how could they possibly have known this back then?" Well, first of all, a lot of people knew a lot of stuff back then that people nowadays don't realize. Like they knew, like they were selling globes when Columbus sailed the sea. They knew the Earth was round. Matter of fact, they knew the Earth was round 2,500 years ago. But the thing about it is, if God was really giving us information in the Bible or the Quran or something that would help further our understanding of the universe, he didn't do a very good job of it, because we didn't know anything about it then. We haven't known anything about these particular things for the last 2,000 years. But now in 2018, they're pointing to it and say, "See, God put this in the Bible to help us out. See, this is there." And it's really not. It's really not that it's anything that can be pointed to as they didn't know it then.
Yeah, not to mention the flat Earth. Well, that's one of the first things, that scientific discovery that's in the Bible. The Earth is flat, but it's not. It's a round spheroid.
Right. Yeah. And, of course, the reason they say that is Satan took Jesus to a point on a high mountain and showed him the entire Earth and tempted him with the ownership of you know, the universe, basically.
Yeah,
and the only way you could see the only way you could see the entire Earth from a high point is if it was flat.
Yep.
And even if they said it was round in the Bible, then round could also be a plate. Round could be a coin. You know, but
not to mention the firmament.
Firmament.
That they thought we were in this giant Mad Max dome.
Yeah.
Which would be way cooler. Mad Max, you ever see that movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
It's pretty dangerous, actually.
Yeah.
It's not cool.
I don't care for that. I hate to be there. Anyway, we're coming down to the wire. Any last words before we sign off?
No, just keep on thinking, and don't be afraid to call in. We may sound a little irritable, but we're actually pretty nice, and we'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, for sure. And this is Doubter 5 with don't worry about where you're going to go in the afterlife. There's probably not one. It's been 2,000, 3,000 years since the Egyptians first put forward the thought that there's souls and we go to a place after we die. And in that 3,000 years, science has never discovered one. Nobody has ever discovered a soul. So until they discover that souls are real, hell's real, and heaven's real, there's no reason to worry about if you're going to go there or not. So don't. Anyway, this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour here every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. So be sure to come back and join us next week. I'm Doubter 5.
I'm Thomas Payne.
And we'll see you next week. Take care.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply-